Hour 2 of Wildcat Insider. I'm John Kurtz, joined by Wyatt Thompson. Mitch Fortner is here with us as well. Coming up in Hour 2 at 5:25, we talk football. Elijah Lee leaving early, leaving a hole in the K-State defense. What are the biggest question marks the Cats will have to address heading into next season? A lot of preseason love for K-State as well so far in early top 25s. Talking about the huge game coming up with Oklahoma State at 5:40, what the Cowboys bring to the table. Cats have to go there on Wednesday. But to start here, you can tweet your questions or comments to the game, KMAN or JL Kurtz, myself on Twitter. I put out the Twitter poll question earlier today. After a 2-3 start to Big 12 play, do you think K-State makes the NCAA tournament? We had almost 500 people respond, and right now 61% say no. So it is basically a 60-40 split with no on K-State making the NCAA tournament right now. I think it's a really hard question to answer, and that is part of the reason I put it out there to get a little bit of a gauge of where people are at. I was asking some fellow media members the same question as we were leaving the game on Saturday, because I think as we outlined earlier in the show, no shame in losing to Baylor. That's a very good team. They legitimized themselves to me in a lot of different ways with how they played. But you are in a tough spot now, 2-3 with two games this week that are by no means easy victories, going to Oklahoma State and then playing West Virginia at home. So it's a big swing week, really, in the season.
Almost put another week on top of that, too, John. And I think that I wonder if maybe that is in part why the swing is 60-40 at this point, because the reality of it is Kansas State will close January this way at Oklahoma State, West Virginia at home next Saturday. Then you go to Iowa State the following Tuesday, and then to Tennessee for the Big 12 SEC Challenge. So basically that's 3 out of 4 on the road.
Mm-hmm.
What will Kansas State basketball look like at the end of January with 8 games to go in February and 2 more in March? It's really a big, big question right now.
Yeah, and winning on the road has been a definite difficulty. Bruce Weber went 6-3 his first year with that Big 12 championship team on the road, and then since then 4-25 on the road in Big 12 play. And we saw another example of K-State being a game team, certainly in Lubbock, but letting it slip away late. That's that hurdle they're going to have to clear. And, you know, Oklahoma State's not a world beater right now, but they're certainly a team that could jump up and beat you in a place that you've had just a heck of a time getting a win at in recent memory.
Well, and we mentioned last hour, too. We'll talk more about Oklahoma State a little bit later. But this is a team that is 0-5. But despite that, you can certainly understand why they would be a little bit dangerous, in particular at home, because they have such quality guard play. Juwan Evans is such a handful at the point. You got Phil Forte, who's like 11-3 makes away from the all-time record of Keaton Page there in Stillwater. And then I personally would tell you, I think one of the most underrated players in our league is Jeffrey Carroll. This is a guy that's averaging 18 points a game in conference play. I know it's early, but this guy can play. When he plays well, they're pretty darn good with those three guys.
Yeah, he has really impressed me so far this year. Yeah. I didn't think he'd be churning out the numbers that he has so far. So we'll get to some of the responses. People have tweeted in some questions, and we'll address that later on at 5:40 as well. I did want to get to one of the points in the Baylor game that seemed to draw a lot of discussion afterwards, and I can understand why, and that was the timeout that Bruce Weber took after K-State had gone up 47-45. Xavier Sneed sticks a 3 in the corner. After the timeout, Baylor scored 8 straight. K-State never got within 4 the rest of the way. That was when Baylor sort of created their space and not really cruised, but held K-State off the rest of the way to get that win. I understand that people thought it seemed like an odd place to call the timeout after you get a made basket and you have a lot of momentum. Bruce Weber did explain, in his words, why he took that timeout after the game. So first things first, this is why Bruce Weber said the timeout was taken.
It was just to give us some rest. I knew there was we've had trouble defending in second halves, and I wanted to make sure we had legs, and, I guess it was a change of momentum for them, because so it's my, you can put that on me, I guess.
I understand what he's saying about trying to make sure they have legs, because this is one of the drawbacks of something we've been talking about all year, and that is you're really at a 6.5, 7, maybe if Maurice is going to be a player now, 8-man rotation, but it's really getting no deeper than 7. I mean, you're relying so heavily on 5 guys, mm-hmm. maybe a 6th with Xavier Sneed, that is going to be something that comes up. So in a way, that was a weird way that you might not expect it to manifest itself, but that is where some of the depth issues can manifest themselves.
Well, let's look at the the box score from Saturday and kind of just augment what you're talking about. Those starters, D.J. Johnson, 33 minutes, Dean Wade, 35, Kamau Stokes, 32, Barry Brown, 31, Wesley Iwundu, 31. So what does that leave of the 200 minutes? You're talking about 6 for Corby Irvin, 12 minutes for Isaiah Maurice, and 20 for Xavier Sneed. What does that mean? Well, 20 for X is probably about normal. I think he's 19 and a half. I'll double-check and make sure. He's, 19.8 minutes, so pretty much average. Corby, that would be a little bit below. He's about 14 and a half per game. And then, of course, for Isaiah Maurice, 9.2, which includes Saturday, 12 minutes for him would have been a Big 12 high. So I guess I'd say all of that to say I kind of understand his thought process there of trying to give them a breather there with the lead and the place is going crazy and you get the lead right back, which was paramount at that point. But it kind of did seem to, you know, right or wrong, it did appear that, you know, Baylor, the 8-0 run says what it says, I guess. Maybe that's the best way to say it.
Well, I'll play both sides here a little bit and say that, one, yeah, you are limited in your depth, and so trying to get the guys a breather makes sense in a way. And then the other thing, too, was and Xavier Sneed was one guy who elaborated on this some more when he was asked about what was said during the timeout. They talked about how to attack Baylor if they went man instead of zone, which they did shortly thereafter. So It was partly strategic as well. And K-State had missed three straight empty possessions before that three. So the offense had been fairly stagnant before they got the three. So it's not like the timeout was just taken for no reason, which, you know, judging by, I think, my Twitter mentions right after all that had happened, a lot of people thought was the case there. I mean, there was reasoning behind it. You can agree or disagree with it. I think at times, back when the rule was that you could still call a timeout from the bench, I know a hot topic then was sometimes the shot clock would get down to 4 or 5 seconds, something like that, and Bruce Weber would take a timeout, and it's hard to draw up a shot after that point. So, look, I know people have been disagreeing with some of the ways that he uses timeouts for a while, but I will point that out and then say there's also some legitimate reasoning behind it as well.
Well, I don't think there's any doubt about that. I would, I guess, encouraging phone calls here. Do you think, as an example, this is just me being devil's advocate or throwing it out there, I guess, depending on how you want to say it. I happen to believe that much more significance comes on the 12 second-half turnovers than the timeout with 9:57 to go with a 2-point lead. That's what I would say.
And just
call me and tell me if I'm wrong.
Just not being able to get stops, too, yeah, is the other thing. I mean,
well, that's exactly right, because you look at what Baylor did in the second half. Do you remember what they did?
They scored almost 50 points, like 46 points on 60% shooting, something like that.
Yeah, 46 points and made 15 of 27 field goals. That's almost 56%.
There you go.
And K-State, this is kind of an alarming statistic, too. In the second half for K-State to this – and I understand it's five games. I get that. But in the second half, opponents are shooting about 55% against K-State in the second half of these five games. Maybe that speaks to the minutes.
It could, yeah. And that's the type of thing that might diminish the further and further you get along in Big 12 play, where you see some of the lack of depth start to show up. Again, it's not like it was all self-inflicted. You've had injuries that have certainly contributed to that. Dante Williams leaving the team. There's been a lot of things that have worked against you in that department, but that is a reality that K-State's having to deal with at this point in time. And I guess you just hope that it doesn't wear on them too much. And I know you spoke to this a little bit earlier on in the show, but you've had – I mean, the Kansas loss was just crushing the way that happened and the obvious controversy at the end of that. Texas Tech, much the same. Maybe not quite as controversial, but I think you still feel like you didn't get any breaks that helped you out and you found a way to lose again, just like the Maryland game earlier this year. Baylor, you played fairly well but just didn't have enough down the stretch. You hope that a lot of the close losses this year, combined with everything they went through last year with the three overtime losses, the other losses that came by 3 points or less, that it just doesn't wear on them too much mentally when they get in these situations, because I would anticipate they're going to be in a similar one on Wednesday in Stillwater.
Well, I'd like to think that the year that we've talked about all along of experience for those younger guys makes a difference now. I put the Baylor loss in a different category than the other three close losses, to be honest about it. And I do think that this team is better equipped to handle more of these types of tough situations. And I think they have – this is just my opinion now. I do believe that they have been better this year. Just being in games and having chances probably tops what they were doing in the back half of last year's conference season, to be honest. But it's hard on the road, you know, and that was the frustration of the game at Tech, because, yeah, you can talk about the foul on Dean Wade. Yeah, you can talk about the swipe of the arm or the non-swipe of the arm of Barry Brown and the foul and the technical. Or you can talk about, you know, the fact that they missed the front end of a 1-1 and the play that Wes didn't make in the lane. And, I mean, you know, you – that's why I think Bruce got them all together at the airport. Coach Weber got them at the airport and said, guys, this is on us too. You know, we've got to finish. It's just what it is. It's hard, but starts this week. As far as I'm concerned, you go find a way to beat Oklahoma State, and then you come back and beat West Virginia. Everything's pretty good again. So let's shoot for that.
Yeah, it just feels like they need one to happen, and maybe the other dominoes will start to fall in
place.
That's
what I'm
hoping. You just get over the hump one time.
But you worry. You know, we said it a while ago, three of the next four on the road, that's going to be tough. And where are they at mentally? I think they're in decent shape, but I think there is some vulnerability there. I think anybody would say that. So we'll see how it plays out. Big ball game Wednesday night.
Huge, huge. And we'll talk about the Cowboys later on. At 540. 537-1350, 866-776-1350 to join us here on Wildcat Insider. You can also tweet us at the game KMAN. What are the biggest question marks for K-State football this offseason? Plus, some info on the spring game when we return here on Wildcat Insider.